You're listening to episode 66 of Power Pearls Podcast. I'm the host, Karagat Warner, and it's my mission to share those stories that celebrate our passion for making and yarn crafting and what keeps us going down that path. Hey there, Power Pearlers. Before we get started today, I want to share a little something with you. I am in the process of looking for beta testers for a new creative coaching program. Now, this is a new area for me, and it's one that I've been dreaming about for years because it will give me the ability to pay forward my more than 15 years in the yarn crafting world as a designer, magazine editor, illustrator, and podcaster. But now I need your help. So here's my goal. It's to learn more about what your needs are so I can build a sustainable program for those of you who wish to create a fiber business. So here's what I'm offering. A free 60-minute session for the first 10 people who jump on this. So if you want to learn more and you want to sign up for your free session, go to powerpearlspodcast.com/free strategy session. Hey, Power Pearlers, welcome to another episode of Power Pearls Podcast. Today, I am chatting with Liz Gibson, known for her weaving expertise in the yarn universe. She writes a popular Weaving for Knitters column for Knitty and regularly contributes to blogs and fiber-related publications. Last year, Liz teamed up with Pearl Loop to create the Swatchmaker Loom, a simple tool that weavers work out ideas on a small scale. Liz is the author of A Weaver's Guide to Swatching and has also authored several other books, and she has worked with Interweave and Shocked Spindle, hope I said that right, and has had numerous appearances on PBS, DIY, and HGTV networks, where she introduced weaving and spinning to the yarn crafting world. So Liz, I want to say welcome to Power Pearls Podcast.
Yay, so happy to be here.
Yes, finally, because we've been talking for months, I think. Yeah, and so the last time we spoke, we had such a great conversation, and we just collaborated and had an idea to, you know, just to get you into creative knitting again, to do a weaving article. And, you know, I'm also excited about having you on the podcast because this is the first time that we're really digging into the subject of weaving, you know, so like what can we do with our yarn other than knitting? So I know that this is definitely an interest to the Power Pearls audience because they seek more than, like I said, just knitting or crocheting because there's some crocheters that are watching. So before we dive into that and we talk about your current activities because you've got a lot going on and also your background. I mean, you've been around for a long time. So I want you to share a bit more about yourself personally with the audience and how you entered the yarn crafting world.
The yarn universe.
The yarn universe.
it's such a corny to say, but a blessing. I just feel really lucky. And I always talk about exposing kids to a lot of stuff early because you never know what will stick, right? What will stick. Mm-hmm. I was introduced to weaving at a really young age. My mom was an occupational therapy aide, among many things in her career, in the 70s, and they would never let this happen now. She, OT and weaving were synonymous at that time. So it was really common to have these large weaving studios. And this was on the psych ward of the University of Virginia Hospital. So, you know, I like to say I've always connected crazy people in weaving. It's been in my blood from the very beginning. But it was so amazing. Cindy Lally ran this weaving workshop among with these other women and therapists, and had all these big looms, and they'd let me come around, and Cindy would throw the shuttle, and I'd run around to the other side and grab it, throw it back, and then sleep under the looms like an exhausted puppy. And it stuck. I mean, I was exposed to a lot of different things as a kid, but when it came time to sort of look at career paths, the first thing I thought of is, I want to be an occupational therapist because they get a weave. You know, and they get to do this crafty stuff and hang out with people. So I've always seen crafting through the lens of being a social activity, as something that you do with people.
But it's always been weaving. I mean, has knitting or crochet entered your life at any point?
Yeah, you know, I didn't learn to weave as a kid. I actually was a crocheter. Like many, you know, crochet was the easy thing to pick up with a hook, and I made tons of afghans. I had a little Singer sewing machine, like the little girl one.
What color was it? It was pink, right?
It was pink. It was pink. And but I was bad at it. And I'm not, you know, my skills never really evolved. You know, I had this like make stuff for my teddy bears. And, you know, I was surrounded by people who made things, and lots of musicians and writers and, you know, people who had small businesses. And so we were always making stuff. And it wasn't, weaving didn't really come back into my life until I went to college.
That's interesting how that happens. You know, like you learn something, or you're introduced to something, just like a little spark, you know, when you're a kid, and it manifests it in a different way, or it comes back right when you need it. Because yeah, I hear that a lot, like things come back in college or like in your early 20s, like in my case, knitting came back to me in my early 20s. So, all right. So keep on going. So I want to see.
All right. So okay. College. Well, after, you know, some adventuring, I landed in Colorado at CSU, and they had an occupational therapy program and a fiber arts program. And I thought, aha, I'm going to do it. I'm going to be an occupational therapist. And did not get in, right? So it was a really competitive program. And I was kind of despondent. I mean, another life lesson, you know, when things don't work out, it's usually for a reason, because I don't think I would have been very happy, you know, with a career as an occupational therapist. So I was wandering the halls despondently, and I saw this sign outside of the economics department. They had a social economics, and it said, go to New Zealand, study sheep. I was like, that's it. I'm on it. I'll do it. Because I was also obsessed with sheep when I was a kid. I made everyone go to the dog trials. We had them in Virginia at these very well-known dog trials, and we would go to the county fairs. And I just thought, we had grown our own food and raised our animals, and I really, really loved working with livestock, but I didn't like the meat end production of it, right? So I was always, what can I do with animals that would be something else? So it was, well, fiber. So I transferred into the social science department, and they had a value-added agriculture, sort of a self-designed through social economics, and went off to New Zealand, studied wool science for a year. And in the meantime, it also gravitated over to the fiber arts department, which was in the fine arts building. And it was sort of the last crew that was able to minor in fiber arts. And Tom Lumberg, which is where I met some of my lifelong friends, and did this thing thinking, you know, Peace Corps, worked on the Navajo Reservation, you know, went off and did some rambly things. And it was just a lot of great stuff. And then, kicked out of college. Go ahead.
No. Sorry. No, you keep going.
Well, I dumped out of college. So you do this, you know, this exploration, what am I going to be? Because college is an interesting experience too. You get to try on a lot of different things. And I was on the 7-year plan, right? Sort of bopping around trying to figure out how to make a life with these things that I was interested in. And for whatever reason, I just kept pursuing anything that had to do with weaving and sheep and fiber and people, just at it. And when I got out of college, I landed in Estes Park and just stumbled upon an alpaca farm, the Switzer's farm up there, and was their barn girl for a while. And I got a job with a nonprofit. They needed somebody to do arts programming for a mentoring program. So I worked in there, and eventually they had offered me the position of executive director, which I did. And it was an amazing experience because I'd done some arts administration classes and grant writing and running a nonprofit and fundraising. And I was doing very little arts programming at that point, right? It was just purely being an administrator. And then the sort of the moment that sort of has defined my career since then is my college friend, Amy Clark Moore, was at Interweave, and I kind of had no idea that Interweave was in my own backyard. I was, you know, it was there. I didn't have a lot of relationship with the folks in during college, which is ironic because afterwards I ran their intern program when I ended up there. But she was promoted to as being the editor of Spinoff. And she said, hey, you know, we have this position opening up. I think you would be great for it. I think you should apply. And I had done some, I shouldn't say I didn't have any relationship with Interweave because I did volunteer for Nature's Dyes. I was the only natural dyer in the program. And I got this really plum, like, assist, John Marshall, who's an amazing indigo dyer, and help put this on, which is where I met Marilyn Murphy. So I knew it was there, but didn't kind of get it. So it was a job for an assistant editor, and I applied and got it. It was part-time, and eventually became managing editor and of both Spinoff and Handwoven, and then eventually full-time Handwoven. And then we bought Knitting Daily TV, and I was the only one in that world that had television experience. But it was such an interesting time to be in publishing because I truly joined. When I joined, Interweave had only had email for like a year or two. And our team was the first one to put together a digital product to sell. So we were transitioning from, you know, publishing from going from a print sort of literary approach to a digital free-for-all.
but it was primarily in those days TV, right? So,
oh yeah.
Know, because no one was really embracing the online digital until really, I think Interweave was already getting in there around the same time, but Craftsy really made it a big deal for everyone, really hit that, you know, hit a home run with that for everyone. And then here we are today. But, you know, back then you were at the forefront, you were on the ground level. So there were so many opportunities for you at that point.
Well, interesting to be in it while it was happening because, yeah. You know, PBS, HGTV and DIY were where a lot of that program, I mean, you know, Elizabeth Zimmerman, we had, you know, I mean, this is where we got that approach. And I was fortunate enough in just lucky. You just keep looking and you just take the opportunities. Our community college had a professional certificate in video production and editing, and having the other things my family did was theater. My mom was a television talk show host in our town. I had this experience with studio work, but I loved editing. I liked the production part. So I went off and did that certificate. At the same time, Interweave was sort of like, ooh, how do we do this digital thing? It was coming on strong. And again, change sort of after being at Interweave for nearly 9 years, I kind of realized I'd done everything I was gonna do in that environment. I'm really not, there wasn't anything left for me to do. And the opportunity came up. I called up Jane Patrick and said, hey, what's going on at Shacked? You know, you guys need any help over there? And they were very kind and brought me over into the sales and marketing department. Jane was looking to do some other projects. And that was pivotal for a couple of things. I also did half a master's in adult education. Well, I mean, it's just sort of messing, right? You keep doing this stuff. And seeing manufacturing and the shop community there. I mean, I'd worked with shops at Interweave, but this other piece that was happening was sort of cemented my view of the industry itself in a lot of different ways. And then things changed. I was there for just a couple years, realized sales and marketing was probably not where my heart was. And personally, I was commuting from Loveland to Boulder, and that was getting to me. It was too long, so I was going to have to make a chance to choose. So I went rogue. At that point, I went off on my own. I had this video production background, and I actually worked for Craftsy as a freelancer during its startup phase. So they were looking to build out their spinning and weaving content. And so I worked with them for about 9 months, putting out some of the classes and, you know, working with folks there. And it was interesting. I mean, they definitely see themselves and were disruptors. Mm-hmm. You know, they came in with that platform.
So let's kind of switch gears a little bit and talk about that pivotal moment when yarn and weaving kind of became a thing, because I know, gosh, more than 5 years ago, I mean, I started seeing the little Shacked, you know, the little weaving.
Yeah. Cricket. the cricket.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, what am I calling that thing? The little weaving thing. Yeah. And so it became a big deal, and it has been now for quite some time. So how did you play a role in that kind of evolution of bringing yarn, bringing knitters and crocheters, needle crafters, you know, into this world of weaving?
Well, it's really interesting. The first part of my career solidly during that time, I worked with people who made things for people who make things, right? So the world was, and specifically I was a spinner and a weaver, and I had already written, I mean, it's been an evolution, like so many things, you know, the sort of 100th monkey syndrome, starting with, you remember when everyone was making eyelash scarves, like the novelties were all the rage?
Oh, yeah.
Well, Ashford got busy, and we always knew, rigid huddle weaving was the gateway to weaving, and it's pushed beyond that. I mean, we can talk about modern weaving later, but that gateway to sort of those weaverly skills, and yet the tools needed to evolve. There needed to be new tools to make this a more accessible craft, and so Ashford brought this prototype. We were at a store and they said, here, try this loom out. You know, it's, we're really, you know, we want to get your feedback. And so that was the knitter's loom. And they came out with this lightweight, foldable loom that could accommodate these knitting yarns. Because the thing about, you know, floor loom weaving is it's not, it has a much narrower band of yarns you can use. So here comes a loom where you could use all the yarns you already have and start making stuff. And it really was a game changer. Mm-hmm. And so quickly following, you know, and Ashford and Schacht have always had this like, oh, I have this idea. Ooh, let me do my idea. Oh, I have an idea. Okay. And of course, Jane Patrick was the creative director at Schacht Spindle. She was the editor of Handwoven. She was it. And then she's married to Barry Schacht. And she had been sort of saying, we got to make a different loom. We got to make a different loom. And so they came along and brought first the flip and then the cricket, which really was the game changer because it's so functional.
But then we had the Zoom loom in there and now the Pearl, Pearl Loops Watchmaker. And I think that appeals to a lot of knitters, I think, because it's a small, you know, portable kind of, it reminds me of when I was a kid, you know, making pot holders. But I mean, I think that that's kind of like a good bridge for a lot of knitters.
Absolutely.
Because you can use, you know, pretty much not any weight. Yeah, I guess you could. I mean, you can use any weight yarn on that type of a loom. So, so the swatch, what is it? It's called the swatch.
Well, the swatch maker.
Swatch maker.
And there's the stash blaster, and she had already done, and you know, Marianne Moody set the world on fire. And for those that have been around in what she did is made weaving craft friendly. She made it incredibly approachable to where it's a creative exercise, not necessarily a making exercise, right? So it's the wall hangings that ate the internet, right? They showed up everywhere and they were so, you know, and some folks would say, oh yeah, those are like the ones from the 70s, but they're not. The yarns have changed, the sensibilities have changed, and the idea of just making something approachable changed. And so when I approached Pearl and Loop, she was making these little looms because she thought, oh, I'll make a little loom. And there were all these folks wanting this piece. And what I was looking for is I was writing this new book and weavers can't swatch. Mm-hmm. So while it makes weaving accessible, I was looking for a tool. And I know knitters think swatching sometimes is a dirty word, but for weavers, we're envious.
No, I think that's great. I mean, I think that the title of, well, you know this from being an editor, the title is so important. If you get the right title, it's like gold. And you have a title, A Weaver's Guide to, we're talking about your book, right? Weaver's Guide to Swatching, because you have many books. And I really like your tagline. So we'll get to that, the subtitle, and we'll get to that in a second. So yeah, so now that that was my next question. So now that we are in that mode, we've segued to this. Tell me, so let's talk about this book and how it's a great swatching guide and how, that definitely helps the knitters.
They team up with the looms themselves. So the looms came first, and then I realized people needed a system for using it. So this was my first venture into self-publishing. So, you know, soup to nuts, putting out the book myself. And it's a small, it both teaches you how to weave on a frame loom because it's immediately accessible and there are always tricks. There's ways to make it faster. There's ways to add pickup sticks and loom, you know, there's ways to make it more efficient. But we, you know, as a person who wants to make stuff and you want to design your own things, the designer's path is you get an idea, you test it, you swatch it, right? You figure out, will these yarns work? Will this finishing work? Will this set work? So set is the weaver's gauge, right? What, you know, what size needle, we say, what size heddle do I need? And then you wash it, you test it, you go through, and then you design a bigger project from that. So the swatching and these small frame looms allow you to follow that process so that you can fail faster. And that's really what we're talking about is risk management. And rather than, you know,
that's great. I love it.
Yeah. Warping up this whole thing because we can't frog it. There's no ripping out for us. Mm-hmm. You know, we really need to be able to test and the loom, because their frame looms aren't new. They've been around forever, but they weren't in these finer sets that weavers use. They weren't in the gauges that we needed. And so rigid heddle weavers primarily use 8, 10, and 12 or their metric equivalents, which are close enough, really. And then you can double the threads, so you can get 16, 20, and 24, which is also very common for the floor loom weaver. So this is that entryway into the idea. You know, weavers call it sampling, and sampling is just like, oh, that sounds boring. You know, that doesn't sound very interesting, whereas I treasure my little swatches. You know, I put them on little O-rings. I have notes on them. I have them hanging up in my studio. And they're like little memories of where I've been. And they save me. In writing the book, I couldn't. It was an enormous number. This was a new book for Interweave. So it was an enormous number of projects designed and execute in a really short amount of time.
Well, and the thing that I love about this idea of the swatches, which you can make on the pearl loop looms and the zoom loom, and that's what you're talking about. That's the idea. Yeah. That was where this idea of swatching or sampling came from. I mean, that's why you kind of brought that to the needle and arts enthusiasts. And so you can take that little square and you can pick up stitches and you can add it to a bigger project. You can knit into that square, you know, I mean, so there are lots of possibilities, especially if you want to kind of combine this with knitting or crochet.
Yeah. And I want to clarify the difference between the two looms, because the zoom loom you can't really use any yarn with it. It's a little more fixed because the prongs are a fixed relationship. So, you know, I mean, you can use any yarn with it, but you can't test sets in the same way. And the zoom loom creates a square with no fringe. So it's more of a weaving experience in itself and pickup. There are ways that you can create a square with no fringe on the pearl and loop loom, and it has more sets available to it. So there's sort of two different weaverly beasts. And I actually like the fact that the pearl and loop loom has fringe, because in weaving, fringe happens and you have to figure out how to deal with it. And the zoom loom was a whole revolution in itself. Those pin looms were just cool. They were very cool. And I was at Shack just at the tail end when we were, you know, they were sort of working on that product and bringing it out, because all the other looms were off the market, or many of the looms were off the market.
Yeah, I love it. I have a zoom loom myself, and I just, you know, I was just so intrigued by it because of its portability. I could take it out on the porch and make a little, you know, tiny little swatch and then add it to another something that I was knitting, or maybe just do a completely, you know, just a separate project that involves only weaving. So I think that that's why this idea really does appeal to knitters, because it's something that they can integrate into the other, you know, things that they like to do.
Well, and we all have oddballs, right? Mm-hmm. You have so many little bits of precious yarn that what are you going to do with it? And making those little squares are, you know, I had a friend of mine as a 20-year ex-smoker. She's like, yeah, I can make a square in the same time it took me to smoke a cigarette.
I love it.
So it gives you that sort of instant satisfaction. Plus, you know, we like, I mean, the article I contributed in Creative Knitting was about, you know, reduce, reuse, recycle, you know,
exactly,
this idea. So nothing goes to waste ever.
Yeah. It's a very cute little pin cushion. So actually I have it right in front of me here. So, but it's a great article. I mean, like, you did all the photography. So we have that right here. So
It was fun.
Here's my screen to get to see. So that's the summer issue of Creative Knitting. And then here's the lovely little pin cushion, and it's so easy. Like, you know, could be made so quickly. And that's what you're talking about. Is that how you achieved the fringe? Is that,
or yeah, that? So on the frame looms, you're warping, and you're warping around the back. You can either sort of warp around the pegs so there's no fringe, but if you warp around the back, you get pegs. And I, when I first started weaving, I sort of thought fringe was a necessary evil. And I have so come to embrace it, where I really love to figure out what to do with that to really show it off. And of course, trends change. It doesn't hurt that the boho aesthetic is so strong right now, and the weaving aesthetic is in fashion very strongly right now. And, you know, I've been in this industry long enough that, I mean, we all have, that you see the trends come and go. And I'm very grateful that we're on trend at the moment in terms of our craft, because that helps with, you know, people wanting to learn it.
Yeah. And I wanted to go back to the subtitle, because I love it. How to Fail Faster and Weave Better. So a lot of people hate to hear that word. You guys, I know you do. Fail faster. You know, you've heard that term, fail forward. So, you know, can you elaborate why someone would want to spend time failing faster?
Yeah. I don't, you know, it's like that 10,000 hours of mastery. And I talked about this in my Life After Warping, which was a video workshop with Interweave. Just, you know, I've woven a lot of bad cloth in my days. And that when you are in the magazine world and you're putting stuff out, it's always this polished perfection. What nobody ever sees, and we always lamented it and never could quite figure out how to do well, is to show all the disasters. Like the stuff, I mean, my first knitted, like when I was a kid, all those things I was making, you know, they delighted me, but they weren't perfect. They weren't what I was going for. And you have to make a lot of that to really get the mechanics down. So it's way better to do it on a small scale than a big scale.
Absolutely.
You know, and you see that, like, you know, knitting a little sock instead of knitting a big sock, or, you know, I can weave a little square rather than weave a whole scarf and say, no, this isn't what I wanted.
Yes. And you have to make that sacrificial pancake.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like the first pancake is always horrible. Isn't that weird? But, and also, and I always say this to the audience and, you know, the people that take my workshops is, you know, you got to spend time with the swatch so you can discover things. You'll discover these magical mistakes that you just might not discover if you didn't pick up your needles or your loom in this case. So you just have to sit with your work. And I think there's a fear of, you know, well, what if it doesn't work? And, you know, I don't know if you hear that a lot, Liz, but it's just yarn. Oh. It's just thread, you know, but there's this great fear. And I find it to be, sometimes it's very interesting.
I think it's the pinsanity of the world, right? Like we see all these beautiful Pinterest and Instagram feeds and everyone else's stuff is lovely. And, you know, the sort of keep it 100, right? Mm. Like, and I can be guilty of that as well. You know, I don't necessarily share. I love taking a beautiful photo. And so, you know, we don't always see the messy. I really, my friend Kim Worker with her, you know, the mighty ugly approach, like, just make it, learn some stuff, do, you know, get it out there. And that's really important to our journey. And we're, you know, we're perfectionists. You know, we live in a society that often, and I think society's gotten a little better. You know, it allows people to have more flaws and be more, you know, sort of letting all our warts show as to what, you know, what our work is really going to be all about.
Yeah, exactly. And I like you hit the nail on the head with the perfectionism thing. So the fear actually comes from not wanting to, you're just wanting everything to be right and have all the ducks in a row. So, you know, yeah, that was a really good point. So I want to switch gears a little bit now and talk about your Patreon community. So you just started with Patreon. We can kind of talk in conjunction with, you know, this, because this is new, with your Patreon community and your new weaving school. So, so yeah, you want to just...
Actually, it's a perfect segue.
Yes.
Because, you know, you and I come from a background, particularly my video production background and you know, magazine making and you know, product is where you perfect, right? You perfect and then you release. And what I did with Patreon is I said, let's do this together. Let's not do all of this perfection behind closed doors. So I had this moment last year. So I left, I was doing business to business consulting and work until about, 2000 and a couple years ago. So I decided to give myself a sabbatical and say, you know, I'm going to, and this gets to Patreon, I promise.
Okay.
But I said, I'm just going to not take any client work and work for myself. Like, what happens if I just work for myself with weavers? Like, I haven't had this, I've always had something between me and the weavers, right? Like, it's been, so I had launched Yarn Worker, which is a place for me to have a space in the yarn universe. And I have spent a lot of time on the road teaching. And that's what I love most of all is teaching and that sort of student relationship that you have where you grow and you get these aha moments and you really work with people. And so I took a year off. I wrote this book for Interweave. I tried a bunch of stuff. And while I was teaching, first time ever, I shipped my samples, right? I didn't sleep in the same bed one weekend to the next all last summer. I was so like on the road. And what could happen, right? I've shipped things for 20 years and I've never lost anything. People's precious objects. I'm going to ship because it's going to make my life easier. Well, they got caught up in a train wreck and I lost half my samples. So half of my accumulative body of work of patterns and stuff that I've done, I literally got back a box that had like, you know, road rash on it. So some of the projects, it was a blow and it was a weird thing to recover from because I was tired. I've been traveling so much, just trying to sort of figure out what am I going to do next? Like, where am I going? And, just one of those moments I said, you know, I got lemons and my only choice is to make lemonade. So I invited people. I said, I got to reweave these things. Do you want to weave them with me? And so I launched a Facebook group and I opened up a Ravelry thread and I said, let's warp. I just had a new video workshop come out and we started with double weave and it was so fun. I haven't had so much fun in a long time. And there were patterns that already existed, you know, they're from my books or from videos or from Knitty or, you know, they were out there and revisiting them also was like revisiting these old friends. And, so we wove along and by golly, my sample box is full again. And in the course of doing this, it's totally free. I didn't ask anything, you know, I was just like, let's do this. And so then the thing was, well, we want to keep doing it. So I thought, all right, well, this is also, you know, Facebook groups have their limitations from an instructional design point. This wasn't really organized. You know, I didn't do it as a highly organized weave along. It was like, you know, I offered support, but it wasn't, you know, like what you get in a shop or what you get on, you know, where it's beginning, middle, end. So I said, let's keep doing this, but I'm going to find a platform and make it better. And, but in order for me to keep doing this, I got, you know, I can't keep doing it for nothing, but I still wanted them to be free. So Patreon gave me a way to do that, to sort of say, hey, if you want to support me, I'll keep doing them. We'll find a new platform. Let's build it together. And literally at the 11th hour, I had this idea that, wait a minute, what we're doing is building skills. The question I'm getting is there isn't any place out there where folks can have a school experience, an old school experience of weaving. Rigid heddle weaving, and I want to be specific about that. You know, it's not like every kind of weaving. I really focus on the rigid heddle weaver. And so, you know, where can you take all those steps, you know, my very first project, different ways to work, you know, this sort of stepped through approach. So I threw it in there as a stretch goal, as just like, hey, let's do the Weavelogs. And, you know, if we get enough, what about a school? And that has become the goal. I mean, it's been what, 3 weeks, and now it's the school.
Wow, that's amazing.
Really what we're building. Yeah.
I mean, it goes back to what you said before about how things happen, you know, for a reason, you know, and it's just like all that, the damage to your samples. And then, oh my gosh, now I have a Patreon group, because it's all about that engagement and that community. And that's it's so beautiful. Like I feel the same way. And ever since that engagement started and I was able to really, you know, reach out to my audience in a different way, as opposed to the magazine or creating online, you know, classes. And we said this earlier in the pre-chat, you know, you don't have that touch point. So yeah, I mean, that's what I really love about Patreon. You know, I've been on there myself for a little over a year, and it was pretty amazing to be able to have that touch point and that connection that I couldn't have when I was with the magazine. Because, you know, you create this product, you spend all this time, you put it out to the world, and then after it's out there, then you know, you get the feedback, you get questions, but it's just not the same. And the thing that really and maybe you've experienced this too, Liz, it's just this, people really step up, you know, and they help others in the community as well. And so around my particular Patreon group, I have Patreon, you know, like a private Facebook groups. And so if someone is struggling, you know, it's not only up to me, like they also step up too. And that's what's so beautiful about creating community. And so you're like, you're doing it. You're making that happen. And so that's another good segue to, so you've got your Patreon, and we'll talk about how people can learn more about that at the end. But then you also have a school. You're building an online school, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's talk about that.
The school, the vision of the school is, you know, you say school and that means a lot of things to different people. What's also happened in the last few years is there've been a lot of learning platforms that have developed. So Thinkific, Teachable, and they allow you to teach online with the same widgets and gadgets that you can from a lot of others. So you can have video, you can have PDFs, you can have chat, you know, and they're, you know, you have these choices because they're not coded. You know, nothing will ever be, say, as responsive and wonderful as Ravelry, because, you know, it's coded for the community, which is the same as Craftsy, right? In some ways, well, Craftsy built a generic platform and then went craft became its thing. So the idea behind the school isn't so, I mean, it's an online school, but it's really goes back to that sort of adult learning half a master's I took, where you work through a series of classes that helps people build their schools, to build their skills. And that's what I've really seen, and where my happy place is those people who don't know anything about weaving. They love it. They want to develop those skills. They really want know-how. How do I manage my selvages? How do I change colors? How do I work for a single color? How do I, you know, wind a shuttle? They're things that I have done as workshops, but this is more a continuity of learning. So the school part is more, so there are these Weavelongs, which will continue on the school platform, and they are free and open to the public. And of course, I'd love it if you support through Patreon, because that's the way we keep them free and open to the public. And so it's a project-based learning. People always ask me, is it appropriate for beginners? And when you're weaving a project, you know, in this kind of environment, I've seen rank beginners do things that are seemingly incredibly complex, because the loom is fairly straightforward itself. Then the school part offers a series of classes that helps you go from sort of ground zero to being weaving confident. And that's where my goals are. So they're connected to one another, although they can also be standalone, right? You still could take the work, whatever class felt appropriate for your schedule, but I want to graduate weavers. Not that you have to, you know, master all these skills. And then I get referred to as an expert or a master weaver a lot. And I don't embrace that. I really think of myself as being more road tested, You know, I have taught a lot. I have seen all the mistakes. I have made all the mistakes. And I've just learned a friendly way to help you keep weaving. And that's really just the goal. And to make learning fun. Yeah. We've all had those really great teachers in school who really made learning fun and practical.
And so if someone wants to open the door, you know, and start a class. So let's say they want to start with a challenge. So you said that the challenges are free.
Yeah.
So do they enter through, let's say, do you let your patrons know? How do they get to the challenge? Do they go to your school?
Yeah. Well, remember, this is 3 weeks old.
Okay.
So there is
so you're still learning.
There is no school built. We are doing a school raising. We're doing a good old fashioned barn building. But I do have a platform. I'm going to use Thinktific as a platform to do this and for the build out. And I have an intern who's joining me this summer. I teach at New Mexico Tech. So I teach in a university setting. She's coming over. We're going to spend the summer filming. The Weave Alongs continue. So the next Weave Along is in June. We're going to start weaving along with my new book, Handwoven Home. And the Patreons get sort of a producer's say. So they get a vote on what project we're going to weave, and we have conversations there. So they get a little more say in the direction of where the Weave Alongs are going. And, you know, like all Patreons, I have rewards for different levels. And then while we're doing this, I'm building out the school. So the idea is this summer to get 3, 4, 5 classes in the can. We'll see how many we can get done, because it's just me and a camera and a helper. You know, this isn't, I'm not building a studio. If you go on my YouTube channel and you check out my videos, that's what you're going to see, except it's going to be broken down into a classroom setting, right? There'll be lessons, and there'll be a video for each lesson, and there'll be a PDF download, and there'll be a way for you to ask questions.
That's great. So yeah, so if they're on Patreon, they really get on the ground floor, because they have a say in what's going to happen with the challenge. And then quite possibly this is going to become a course, you know, and that's what I think is great about Patreon, because they get to kind of be right there at the forefront. And so on Patreon, is it patreon.com/LizGibson?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's cool.
And
the class, is there so they can go to the online learning platform now, right?
No, not yet.
So just the challenges. The challenges are in. So you're announcing them through Patreon, and then I'm sorry, where are you conducting the actual challenge?
The Weave Alongs, which are the Weave Alongs are going to happen on Thinktific, but we're in a transition. They have been happening on Facebook and Ravelry, and we are moving into the new platform, because I'd like them to be a little bit more organized, quite frankly.
Absolutely.
You know, so there's a beginning, middle, and end. People have been very, very kind about sort of, hey, this is just me weaving and you're hanging out with me. And I think they appreciated how much accessibility they had, and I want to keep that up, but in a more, I have the Facebook group, I have Ravelry, I have messages coming in, I have emails, I have, you know, I've got to consolidate.
Bring it together. I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I have had the same, like I said earlier, we're sort of like, it seems like we're on the same trajectory a little bit. I'm just starting an online learning platform. I'm using Teachable. And so I've had the groups and things happening over here and things happening over there. And I do a lot of live video just, you know, during the challenges and knit-alongs and that sort of thing, just to kind of get everybody excited. But then they end up on the wrong page or the wrong group. And I can see where the confusion is. But if they sign up for the challenge through my Teachable school, then it's all there. Even it's very similar to if they were to buy a workshop, the challenge is a module, right?
Yep.
Same thing for how yours is probably going to be, right? So they can take
it
and walk through the paces within this dashboard. And I think that that's the key to keeping people engaged and not confusing them. Because you know what? You confuse someone, they're going to go. They're gone.
Well, and what I love about this, my motivation too has been, I like building it together because, and this multiple platform thing can be, it's what's been nice. We're a small, intimate group. I anticipate we'll grow and that will bring changes to the group. But by hanging out in Facebook, they're already there. They don't have to go anywhere. And connecting, I offer a lot of support through my blog and my YouTube channel. So all of my, my yarn life is under Yarn Worker. So the Patreon is listed, but yarnworker.com is my website. And that's exactly it, is trying to bring them into a one world. It is one more login, you know, one more place. And Patreon, you know, they have sort of two ways. Either you're doing a project or you're supporting a person. So for me, the Patreon is also a bridge to help get some seed money to build out, to go from this sort of whiz bang, let's give this a try environment to something where there's a little bit more beginning, middle, and end, so that people come into a single environment and have a single experience with the pieces. And that's always, you know, it's like so many things we do. I have this beautiful core of people who just get it because they've been here since the beginning. And then you constantly have newcomers who come in and say, but how, but where, but this isn't, you know, and mm-hmm. so the group has been really good about saying, hey, this is what we're all about. Welcome. This is what we do. We're a little different.
Right.
And that's where that community piece is fabulous.
Yeah. And back to that. So the community piece and the Facebook groups are great. But I think, like, for engagement, I mean, hands down, but just to know that there will be a central place where they can go to get, you know, get the information to and to get the course, the lessons and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I mean, and it's, like you said, 3 weeks in, so it's all a learning process, and it's really amazing just to see how when the community will help lift you up, and that's... It's not all up to you. You get like that support from your community. So it's pretty exciting stuff. So so this summer you'll be taping a lot of stuff. So when do you foresee the doors officially opening?
September. The Weave Alongs will be rolling along. So we're going to weave along in June with a new project, and we'll all give the platform a test. So that's a really great way for these folks that have been, you know, someone just called themselves the Lemonade Crew on Facebook, which is really how I think of them, because I was in this lemonade moment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll be able to test out the new platform, give it a go, you know, see if this is going to work. And in the meantime, start filming. And I still have all my other life. I mean, I am, you know, I travel to teach, you know, teaching at the university, keeping up with publishing commitments and, you know, all of these other things. But by divesting myself of client work, I've been better able to, you know, all those someday projects, right? Someday I wanna, and I am grateful after nearly two decades in the industry to be at my someday and being able to play out those ideas. And technology has caught up so that it's much easier for me to have that kind of relationships that I'd like to have with people.
Well, I can't wait to see what you do. And I really hope that we can keep in touch because, you know.
We talked about this. I think school is the new black. I mean, I think this sort of community funded, sort of more highly niche-y content and with, you know, individuals is you're going to see a lot more of this emerging for folks.
And I think that maybe, and I'm just talking off the top of my head, but maybe there's a webinar in our future together. We can do something for our communities and collaboration.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be a lot of fun, you know, and because, you know, like what you said earlier, I don't know if it was in the pre-chat. I don't know when you said it. Maybe I just imagined that you said it. But it's an amazing community that we're in with you know, just this, you know, the yarn and, you know, just being a crafter, being a maker. And, you know, it's like everyone that I've met, you know, on my path, whether it's, you know, the people in my community, people like yourself, other editors and makers, you know, it's like we're all friends. I feel like, you know, it's not just, yes, we're, you know, we know each other in the industry and we've done, you know, things together, but I feel like we're all friends.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we're all about the same things. We have the same commitments to to the work that we do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those relationships are like money in the bank to me. The relationships that I have with my previous employers, with collaborators, with the makers themselves, you know, people such as yourself, over the years, they just, they're really, really important. That relationships matter.
Absolutely. And there's a piece of advice. Don't burn bridges.
Right.
It's so true. Because when you do, life is ironic and things come back. They always come back full circle, but it's about just always feeling the sense of gratitude, you know, for everything, all the stepping stones. They're all stepping stones, you know? And so where I am, where you are, I mean, these are all new creative chapters. That's all that it is. And, you know, being grateful and appreciative for everything that came before it is like, is the answer to the future successes, you know?
It's so true, which I feel very grateful that at the midst of launching this school, I'm also supporting the new book with Interweave, Handwoven Home, because that's also, you know, working. I still relish working with publishers and, you know, creating content in a different kind of world. And the fact that we can do both and lift each other up is also just speaks to that beauty of collaboration and relationship. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Well, this was fun. And I know we already shared how people can find out about you, but why don't you one more time share the websites and all the social stuff so the listeners can learn more about you.
So yarnworker.com is my website, and that's the best portal to find everything. I'm on Facebook and Instagram, where I hang out the most, at Yarnworker. I'm Ravelry, I'm the cashmere kid. I've been there since the beginning of time. I have goats. That's another story. And then on Patreon, you can find me as Liz Gibson. So I have a little on my website. If you go to contact me, I list out sort of, you know, where I hang out, when, and do what. But yarnworker.com is the best place to sort of land. And wherever you hang out, I'm probably there.
You're probably, yeah, because I see you on Instagram and yeah. Well, this was great. And I love your little fireplace behind you. I feel really warm and cozy. So,
it's nice. It has a heater and then it's light when it's not. The heater
is so cool. Love it. So anyway, this was great. And let's keep the conversation going and take care.
Yeah, it's so good to chat.
Yeah, definitely. We'll see ya. Well, looks like we did it again. We wrapped up another episode of Power Pearls podcast. So I really hope that you enjoyed my conversation with Liz. So don't forget to check her out on yarnworker.com. And so that's where you can learn all about Liz, her books, her products, all that she's done and is doing. And be sure to check her out also on Facebook, on Instagram, and definitely see what she's up to on Patreon, because, you know, she's working on building this online school. She's doing amazing things and you can get in on the ground level. So if you go to patreon.com/Liz Gibson. And so remember, that's Gibson is with a P. So it's GIPSON, Liz Gibson. So be sure to check her out, support her at whatever level makes sense for you financially. And I also want to just take this opportunity on the same subject to thank all of you who are patrons of Power Pearls podcast. It really means so much to me that you help me to continue this craft of podcasting, which I have such a passion for, because it also gives me an opportunity to talk to people like Liz, to pay forward their knowledge and expertise and all the things that they've acquired, so that maybe it'll kind of create a light bulb moment for you. So thank you. So thank you for hanging in there. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting the show. So that wraps it up, you guys. And again, thank you for listening, and I will see you next time.